that affect Betty. So definitely be in prayer for them. Also want to remind everyone that August 20th is our back to school Wednesday night for the kiddos. So you might want to come because I hear somebody smoking ribs. That's what I heard. So if you like ribs, come. If you don't like ribs, like kids and come. So just eat before you get there. How's that? So that's August 20th. So that's about a week and a little over a week away. As I mentioned in class, Hunter always leaves the unit summaries up to me. For some reason, he's gone every time there's a summary of a unit. But as I mentioned, we finished up with the Sermon on the Mount last week. It was a great study. When I asked what people wanted to hear lessons or sermons about, the last time I asked that question, there were two things mentioned: Sermon on the Mount and giving. And I don't like talking about giving, so we did Sermon on the Mount. But I'm just teasing. But here we are. And hey, Logan, will you turn that down just a notch? But as I thought about that, I thought really the Sermon on the Mount is going to impact a lot of what we talk about in relationship to giving, because there's a message in the midst of that. And so we're going to look over probably a month, I'm guessing. We're going to look at a lot of different aspects of God and money, because I think it's a broader story than just giving. But what does God talk about with money, and where do we get? We're gonna kind of explore different ideas, different thought processes. We're gonna look at why we do what we do. We're gonna look at different elements, the responsibility we have as individuals in relationship to this idea of giving and money. The relationship that the church has, the responsibility that the church has. I've been told my whole life, you need to be a good steward. Anybody else ever heard that? Be a good steward of what you have. But that stewardship is not only us individually, but it's also the church. And so we're going to see, and we're going to look at many elements in this idea of God and money. And I think it's important that we kind of step back a little bit, because you hear words, or I've heard words my whole life, that oftentimes we hear, we kind of understand what they mean, but we don't really understand all the practical implications of that word. Is anybody else like me? Let's throw one out there this morning. Let's throw out the word tithe. Has anybody heard that word? Everybody knows what it means, right? No? All right. Tithe is 10%. It's a number. It represents a number. 10%. And so you hear that word a lot oftentimes in the church. You hear this idea of tithing. I mentioned in class this morning about listening to a podcast about two guys from two different, they were both believers, but they were kind of from two different elements. They wanted to be high earners in their life, and the intersection of their life. I'm not going to go into a lot of the details on that story this morning, but it was interesting to hear that they said, "We always tithe." You know, they were in their mid-20s making $175,000 to $250,000 a year, and they said, "We always gave our 10%. It's like a membership fee." And sometimes that's exactly how we view it, right? Is this idea of this is what we're supposed to do, and therefore it's kind of like dues. It's kind of like this is the entrance to church, is to bring your tithe. And we've heard this concept a lot, this word tithe. I grew up hearing this term. You don't hear it as much anymore, but it is a term that I believe most of us have heard in our lives. We've been called to that. And so as a result, it sticks in our mind. And that word really comes from the Old Testament. Now, with that being said, I don't want to get into a battle of old and new here. All right? So everybody understand that. We're not going to get into the battle of old and new and what we're called to versus what we're not called to. What I mentioned in class this morning is that this has been a sensitive is probably not the right word. This has been a struggle in my life since I was about 27 years old. This idea of God and money. My grandpa used to always say, "Money's not an object." And my quick wittedness. Back when I was quick-witted, Atlanta says I'm not anymore. But back when I was quick-witted, I would say, you're right, Grandpa, money is no object, especially if you don't have any. And he always just chuckled at that. But oftentimes, sometimes money becomes such a huge burden in our lives, whether it's because of a scarcity, and sometimes it's because it's too much. And some of you who have dealt with or maybe dealing with the scarcity side would like to try the other side for a while, right? Well, I don't know that it would be that hard. Let me try it out for a while and see what are they. But the reality is money has divided families. It's divided friendships. It's divided churches. It's divided a lot. So what does God say about money? Because I think it's important, even though this isn't one of my favorite topics from the pulpit, all right? That's kind of why I have a hesitation a little bit. It's because it's not one of my favorite topics from the pulpit. But since we're here, since I was asked to do this, we're going to do it. And so I want to go all the way back because really before it was ever commanded, before this idea of giving was ever commanded, in Genesis chapter 4, we're going to bounce a little bit this morning as we kind of introduce this topic, this idea. But turn to Genesis chapter 4. You knew I'd start in Genesis, right? Everybody knew that. But this is the story of Cain and Abel. And now Adam and Eve, his wives, and she conceived and bore Cain, saying, I have gotten a man with the help of the Lord. And again she bore his brother Abel. Now Abel was a keeper of sheep, and Cain a worker of the ground. In the course of time, Cain brought to the Lord an offering of the fruit of the ground. And Abel also brought of the firstborn of his flock, and of their fat portions. And the Lord had regard for Abel and his offering, but for Cain and his offering, he had no regard. And so right here early on in Scripture, before this command, before any of this information, we have this picture, if you will, of two brothers, and these two brothers are bringing an offering to God. Because, you know, it begs the question, like, why did they do that? And so oftentimes in our life, the facts about money and how we handle our money oftentimes relate to how we feel about God. Because the reality is, Cain and Abel both bring an offering. There's people in this congregation that are very good weekly about giving money. And it's not the only thing. We're going to specify money through this series. But I want you to understand in your mind that it's not just money God's looking for. He's looking for all of you. He's looking for your time. He's looking for your effort, your energies. It's not just just money that we're called to give. And so just understand that from the premise. Though we're going to spend time talking about money over the next several weeks, I want to challenge y'all with the understanding that that's not it. That's not all. But at a very early time in our history, you see this offering. And why it was compelled to do that, why it was chosen, I don't really know. But we see one offering that's acceptable to God and one that's really not. And it begs the question that I think is going to be the same question we find throughout history. Throughout history, oftentimes we come from this place of membership, of obligation. And the reality is, oftentimes when we do anything out of obligation, it's not necessarily right. Why did I choose to do this series after the Sermon on the Mount? Because the entire Sermon on the Mount is talking about who are you here? Who are you here? Who are you past the surface? Who are you past what everybody else sees around you? Who are you in the heart? Because what motivates is the difference between what is acceptable and what is unacceptable. Oftentimes what we're doing, even though we're doing it and checking it off the box, the question should be, is it acceptable? That's not whether it'll be counted in the back room or utilized to turn on the lights. Is it because why are we doing what we do? I don't think we ask ourselves enough why we do what we do, and particularly with money. And so in Genesis 4, you see this first example of an offering. And we see an offering that's given of the firstborn. It was the best. It was probably the most prideful. It was probably the thing that he loved the most. And it kind of seems like Cain may have just thrown a few things together to present to God. Like, here you go. Almost like leftovers. Anybody like leftovers? Lana's the only person I know like, oh, there's a few people who likes leftovers. She really doesn't like leftovers. I'm just never home to eat them, so she has to eat them all. But it's kind of that mindset. It's like the first of something versus the leftovers. And man, when you get a rib straight off a smoker, it's pretty good. It's still okay after it's been frozen and reheated, but it's not near. Yeah, Lana and I went to Blue Haven a couple weeks ago for a particular reason, but I asked Michael, I said, he cooks steaks for the teachers on the middle Monday night of a two-week session as an appreciation for them coming and spending time volunteering to teach. And so I texted him. I said, hey, you need some help cooking steaks? He's like, absolutely. So Lana and I went up to Blue Haven, and I love spending time with Michael. Our grill time together is kind of our time to visit, share with each other. But man, there's nothing like him cutting off a piece of a ribeye straight off the smoker and giving you a piece. There's nothing better than that piece. Matter of fact, it's so good, I don't even eat steak typically when I go through the line, because I had that piece, and I'm comparing everything to that piece. And my point is, everybody understands that the first of something, oftentimes, is just the best. And so you see this offering of the best versus maybe the leftovers in Genesis chapter 4. Well, then we fast forward to like Genesis chapter 14, and you see Abram, and he's conquered this land, and he gives an offering of a tithe, a 10% to Melchizedek, a priest of the Most High God. Matter of fact, he didn't even keep the other 90%. He lets all of it go. And so you see these examples of giving. You see these examples of people holding all of this very loosely, and they're giving it because they love God. They're giving it because of their relationship with God. And so oftentimes our motivation in giving is unfortunately out of this place of obligation instead of out of a relationship we have with God. And so as we speak, excuse me, I ate a bunch of dirt yesterday, and it is coming back on me. As we see, let me find the reference here. Turn to Leviticus chapter 27. I know some of y'all, I can already see you're seeing stars. Your eyes are rolling back in your head. Bear with me. Leviticus 27 verse 30. Every tithe of the land, whether of the seed of the land or the fruit of the tree, is the Lord's. It is holy to the Lord. If a man wishes to redeem some of his tithe, he shall add a fifth to it. And every tithe of herds and flocks, every tenth animal of all that pass under the herdsman's staff shall be holy to the Lord. One shall not differentiate between good or bad, neither shall he make a substitute for it. And if he does substitute for it, then both it and the substitute shall be holy. It shall not be redeemed. These are the commandments of the Lord that the Lord commanded Moses for the people of Israel on Mount Sinai. And then turn to Numbers chapter 18. It's the next book over. For those unfamiliar with the Old Testament. To the Levites I have given every tithe in Israel for an inheritance in return for their services that they do, their service in the tent of meetings, so that the people of Israel do not come near the tent of meetings, lest they bear sin and die. But the Levites shall do the service of the tent of meetings, and they shall bear their iniquities, and it shall be a perpetual statute throughout your generations. And among the people of Israel they shall have no inheritance. For the tithe of the people of Israel, which they present as a contribution to the Lord, I have given to the Levites for an inheritance. And the last one I want you to look at this morning is Deuteronomy chapter 14. Starting at verse 22. You shall tithe all the yield of your seed that comes from the field year by year, and before the Lord your God, in the place that he will choose to make his name dwell there. You shall eat the tithe of your grain, of your wine, of your oil, and the firstborn of your herd and flock, that you may learn to fear the Lord your God always. And if the way is too long for you, so that you are not able to carry the tithe when the Lord your God blesses you, because the place is too far from you, which the Lord your God chooses to set his name there, then you shall turn it to money, bind up the money in your hand, and go to the place that the Lord your God chooses, and spend the money for whatever you desire, oxen or sheep or wine or strong drink, whatever your appetite craves, you shall eat there before the Lord your God and rejoice, you and your household. And you shall not neglect the Levite who is within your towns, for he has no portion or inheritance with you. At the end of every 3 years, you shall bring out all the tithe of your produce in the same year and lay it up within your towns. And the Levites, because he has no portion of inheritance with you, and so the sojourner and fatherless and the widows who are within your towns shall come and eat and be filled, that the Lord your God may bless you in all your work that your hands do. And at the end, chapter 15, at the end of every 7 years, you shall grant a release. And in this manner of release, every creditor shall release what he has lent to his neighbor. He shall not exact it of his neighbor or his brother, because the Lord's release has been proclaimed. It goes on and on. What I want you to hear is, if you add up, if you go historically from what God commanded the Israelites to do in the Old Testament, it adds up to 23%. So if y'all are looking for a number this morning, it's 23. If you want to tie yourself to an Old Testament number, what they did, whether they did the 10%, the initial 10%, or the 10% that was given because of festivals and feasts, or the percentage that came every 3 years. The reality is, it all adds up, and if you're a math wizard, it's 23%. So, wow. Is that before or after taxes? See, those are the kind of questions that we oftentimes ask, and I get that. I get that I'm telling y'all things from my own personal struggles, all right? Because I came from a place where I didn't have a lot. I had enough, but not a lot. To a place where I had plenty. And the struggle within that, it is profound, it's very difficult, and it's burdensome. And so you start looking at life a little bit differently. But the reality is, it all stems from the same mindset. I mentioned this morning in class that I hope at the end of this series, my prayer for everyone at the end of this series is that you feel freer, not more obligated. My intention is that you feel freer, because when we get into the New Testament and we start looking at what Jesus talks about with money, and we see more inference to what God's talking about with money, we see that God and money and Jesus and money cross paths a lot. It's a conversation that's had many times. We're going to look at a guy named Zacchaeus. We're going to look at other people and parables that Jesus gave in relationship to money. Money becomes something that becomes our God, much like anything else in life. And God's up there saying, I want to be God. And the more you appreciate what you have is because of me, and it's all mine anyway, the better you're going to manage it. I'm not saying don't save up for retirement. I'm not saying don't do the things that you've been taught or trained to do. I'm saying we need to learn and to understand what it looks like to give and be called into this place of giving. Because we've heard concepts a lot, but it's sometimes the most difficult conversation to have in church. I don't like this conversation in church. Because I mentioned this in class this morning. The most sermons I've ever heard about money and giving have to do with the church building a new building. And so it becomes something that it's not intended to be. Am I saying you shouldn't have a new building? That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying, what motivates you? What causes you to understand that what you have is His? Because it is. As quickly as you got it, it can be taken away. We have emotional responses to money. I'd like to bring up four this morning. And again, this is kind of introductory. We're going to get into the weeds more, I promise. This is, we're going to talk about feelings a little bit for just a minute, because feelings oftentimes is how we make decisions. Am I right? Yeah. So here, you're going to fall in one of these categories in your feelings about money. You're going to be overwhelmed or fearful. And sometimes that overwhelmed feeling comes from a place of lack. Sometimes it comes from a place of plenty. You're going to have guilt or shame. Caution or mistrust. Duty or obedience. Or joy and adventure. Now, most of us find ourselves oftentimes in the first four. Where I'm hoping to land is number five. Where we're not overwhelmed or fearful by it. Because we trust God. We're not guilty about having or not having or shameful. We understand that we have enough. Caution and mistrust is a very generational thing. I will tell you that most people younger than me, which I think there's like three of y'all here this morning, this is your category, oftentimes. Because you've watched, you've witnessed churches not always be responsible on their end of stewardship. And so it brings out a caution or a mistrust in the church and how the church functions and operates financially. Duty and obedience. I think a lot of us in the older generation land in that category. But what I want you to see is that we have feelings about this. We have anxiety about this. We have uncertainty about this. Just me saying that for the next 4 weeks we're going to talk about God and money. Some of y'all are thinking, seems like I need to go somewhere for the next 4 weeks. Because I really don't want to talk about it. We don't like talking about it. I don't like talking about it. It's uncomfortable. People don't, husbands and wives don't even like talking about it. It's a struggle. And I want y'all to know that I feel that. I've experienced that. I still experience that every day. Because when something good happens or something positive happens, and I'm feeling pretty good about that, right? The first thing you want to do is do what? Protect it, right? Because we're thinking about 30 years from now. Or we're thinking about what else we have to do, or the debts we have to repay, or what. And it's hard. There's all kinds of giving, right? There's giving that people give to the church out of obligation and out of duty. There's poverty giving. It's this, I'll give you a little, right? Or this prosperity giving, which is kind of like playing the lottery. If I give God 10 bucks, he'll give me 100 next week. Nobody fits that category. Have y'all tested it? The reality is we have all these different approaches to it, but all the approaches are about the effect on me. Y'all get that? There's no humility oftentimes in our approach with money, because it's like, I'm going to test this out. I'm going to see if this works. I heard on the radio one time that if you do this, this will happen. And so oftentimes we're playing these games with God, and God's just saying, listen, what are you doing? It's all mine. But we don't think that way, do we? We like to think we think that way, but the reality is when you find out some things about yourself. I know Lana and I, we sold our house last year. Wow, what a weird set of circumstances. As a matter of fact, to the point where I told Lana to quit praying. Because she made a deal with God that, we kind of half-hearted decided to put our house, not even on the market, just mention it to a realtor friend of ours. Said, hey, if you happen to know anybody that might like a house like ours, yeah, I don't want it listed, but, just know it might be available. 2 weeks later, we were signing a contract. But after they looked at our house, we were trying to get ready for Kyle's wedding. I met Lana in Farmington at Boot Barn because I needed a sports coat. I don't own a sports coat, right? And so I said, hey, the showing went pretty good. She goes, oh, really? She goes, well, tell me about it. And I said, well, I'll be honest with you. Something weird happened. She's like, what's that? I said, they want to know how much we want for everything. House, furniture, dishes, food in the pantry, sheets, everything. She started crying. And I'm like, I knew she wouldn't love that, but I wasn't expecting that. She's like, I don't want to talk right now. If you know me, that's not a good answer. I want to talk right now, all right? So we go into Boot Barn, awkwardly looking for me a sports coat, and I'm looking at her. She's got tears running down her face, and I'm wanting to talk, but she's told me I can't. And so we're waiting, and finally, she gathers up her words, and she said, I told God, if you want us to do this, to sell our home, make them want everything. So we sold it. Now, we thought, ooh, God's got something big in store for us. And after 4 months of living in our camp trailer, we weren't sure anymore. Because we thought, man, we were being faithful, right? And so, man, look, we're just going to get rewarded because of this faithfulness. And sometimes it's just about being faithful. It's the hardest lesson my wife and I learned last year. It's not about the results always. It's about being faithful. You might not get the results that you thought you'd get. You might be sitting there going, God, remember us? We sold it all for you. Where's our kickback on this? It's the transactional God. I'll do this, you do this, right? We've taken so many of our human tendencies and man approach and laid it over God, and we're wanting God to function out of our comfort place. And sometimes God's just saying, man, you know how much care I have for the lilies in the field? Just because you don't see it, just because you don't necessarily experience it, doesn't mean I don't care for you. It doesn't mean I don't love you. But I need Kevin and Lana to realize that I'm enough. I'm enough. And if we start learning to live a life out of abundance, God is a God of abundance. Y'all know that? God is a God of abundance. He gives plenty to us. Even when we're unfaithful, He's giving, and we serve a God of abundance. And when are we going to start realizing that we serve a God like that? A God that is going to, that desperately wants to lavish on His children. But we're not sitting there looking for it. You know what's crazy? Something crazy happened today. Lana and I both woke up. What a blessing. We look at life so backwards sometimes. Yeah, we're going to talk about money. And I've memorized every face that's here this morning. So if you're not here next week, this is going to be freeing. I promise. But you have to claim it. I didn't say it's going to be easy. I didn't say it's not going to come through some hardship. I didn't say it's not going to come through some letting go. I'm saying it's going to be free. Because what God has always wanted for His children is to live freely in Him. That's why I can make that statement so confidently. It's because it's right in line with what God's intention is for His children. It's not easy life. It's not always viewed that way. But it has the potential for each of us to be free. So as we look over the next several weeks, at God and money and how they intersect and what God has to say about it. I want us to dive deeper than just giving. Because giving is, if you were raised in the Church of Christ, giving is an act of worship. Right? And I actually really like that. It's an act, it's a calling. It's an act of worship. But oftentimes we have not looked at it that way anymore. We've just looked at it as dues, as obligation, as customary or tradition or whatever the case may be. But my approach in these next several weeks in money isn't going to have a lot to do with how much you put in a contribution plate when it passes in front of you. We'll talk about it, right? Not the amounts. I won't make you guys write it down. But we're going to talk about life change. Because if the heart changes, guess what happens? What you do changes. That's why the value of the Sermon on the Mount, in order of now we're talking about this, is because if God's got your heart, He's affecting everything. And if He's affecting everything, guess what else He's affecting? Your money. Oh, His money. And so my challenge for us is to learn how to be free in Him. And that includes money. So this morning, I want to challenge y'all to be here. First of all, and I got every face memorized. Don't you forget. You'll be getting a phone call from me if I don't see you next week. Hey, not going to say this is going to be easy. Not going to say I'm not going to step on toes. Not going to say you're going to agree with me on everything. And I'm okay with that. Trust me, I'm way better with that than most people are. But I do need you and want us to hear a perspective that I feel like is biblical, that I feel like is part of who God is. Because in the midst of talking about money, we're going to talk more about Him and what His desire for you is. And that does involve our funds. That does involve our work. It does involve the things that we do. You know, I have to tell my oldest son, he loves his job, but there's a couple people at his workplace that he just is frustrated by all the time. Anybody have one of those? I have one. His name's Hunter. And you know, I had a conversation with him this week. He called me after work. He's like, oh, man, so-and-so. I'm not going to mention a name in case you happen to know him. Just so frustrating, and he's talking about this frustration. And I constantly have to remind him all the time. I was like, who are you working for? You know, has anybody ever watched that show, The Miracle, about the Olympic hockey, ice hockey, when they won the gold years and years ago before they allowed professional athletes to play? Does anybody watch that? If you haven't, you ought to. Fantastic movie. Fantastic. Michael Douglas is the coach in the portrayal of this movie. And he's just whipping these boys. I mean, just working them hard, hard, hard. And they're frustrated. And they're all, none of them are professional athletes. They're all from colleges. This is before professional athletes could compete at the Olympics. So they're all in practice. And they're all wearing their own jerseys, right? Stanford or Florida State or whatever university. Probably not Florida State. They probably don't do ice hockey. More north. And they're all wearing their college jerseys. And he'd run them and ask one of them, who are you playing for? I'm playing for you. One would say, I play for Stanford, or I play, and then he'd run them again. They'd ask them again. They'd say a school name, and he just kept running. And finally, one of them was like, we're playing for the United States of America. And he's like, that's right. We're here as a relationship to God. And if that's the most important thing, if that's the team we're on, what's it look like to be on that team? Because it'll affect everything we do. It'll affect how we handle everything. And that includes money. This morning, I want to challenge y'all to be here as we dig into specifics and particulars. This has kind of been an overview. My old business partner, I always hated the word tithe because it was an Old Testament word. that he just felt like got thrown around way too much. And this is a guy that would sell everything he had and give it away. And I've watched him do it multiple times. And it's been pretty incredible having him as a part of my life through some of my journey in terms of relationship with God and money. So I want to challenge us to think past the Old Testament command of tithe, to think past what Paul talks about, to include those in the conversation, as Paul talks about in 1 Corinthians. They need to be part of the conversation. They need to be part of what we hear and what we understand and know. But this is way bigger than all of that. This is about our relationship with God. This morning I want to challenge y'all with that. If there is anything that we can do for you this morning, I'd ask that you come as Bill leads us in an invitation song.